Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined at the mic by my fellow cattle selectors. I've got Cheryl Lindemann.
Hello.
And Mari Garza.
Hey there.
And today we've got a great selection of picks for you. So it's like mid-November when we're taping this, and we wanted to do a shout-out for Native American Heritage Month. So there's a little bit of that in here. But we also wanted to talk about just books we liked, books that would make pretty good gifts for this coming season. So, I don't know. How's things going, everybody?
It's been a good month so far. I've really enjoyed my reading.
Yeah. Heavy reading. Lots to try to fit in by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's kind of how I'm feeling.
Big to read piles.
Falling over to read piles.
Mm-hmm,
I've got
exactly.
those.
Yeah.
Just falling. But I've also feel like I'm going to actually talk about a few of them today. Some of my favorite books of the year have kind of come in the last couple months.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of cool.
Very
some of
nice.
Them I've read earlier, but they all came out this month.
Okay.
And some of them I've hinted at earlier, but now I get to talk about them. So
excellent.
Sorry, I'm going to gush. I'm just telling you that right now.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Does somebody want to start off with
them? Well, sure. I'll start off.
Alrighty
then. I've got some picture books I'd really like to recommend. November is Picture Book Month in a kind of unofficial way. It's not a huge celebration, but it's out there. And I've got three books that I've been into lately. The first one is called Just in Case You Want to Fly. And this is by Julie Fogliano, and it's illustrated by Christian Robinson. And it's a really, really, it's kind of like a read-aloud that could be perfect for bedtime or even in a story time. Any librarians are out there listening to me because there's a lot of rhyme to it. And it is poetic in some ways. And I think I find it poetic because the spread, the way Christian does the artwork, it's just they're just simple text shapes that are kind of juxtapositioned in some way. And what I really like is the rhyming that that he does, or that Julie does in this book. It starts out with just like kind of putting two different scenes. Just in case you want to fly, here's some wind and here's the sky. So there's a piece of clothing that's flying in the wind, and then there's a clothesline with clothespins and items that are out to dry. It's just a really, really beautiful book. And these two also partnered in one of my favorite books. It's called When's My Birthday? And that was published back in 2017.
Okay.
But again, that one's just about a child that's really excited about their birthday party. And it just really, they do really, really well together. So
very cool.
The other one I want to recommend is called Poco and the Drum, and that's by Matthew Forsyth. Again, beautiful artwork.
Beautiful.
I mean, some of it kind of reminded me of some of those watercolors you saw in the, you know, Impressionist artists of way back, you know, Henri Matisse. The watercolor scenes of the forest in this book is really, really stunning. And what I... just to give you an idea, it starts out with like a two parents who are like, yeah, we really made a mistake by giving the drum to her this time. And you can imagine what's in the background. And the mom's trying to read but can't hear the dad talking because of the drumming. And they start, you know, they start talking about the other things that were kind of mistakes too, like the slingshot and the llama, the balloon, you know. But really, the drum was really a big mistake that the parents decided to give to Poco, who is a frog child. But it's just a really great book about having someone be really courageous and getting animals all together to play together. So the other one that I'm going to recommend quickly is A River. And this is by, I think the way you say the name is Alicia Cooper, or is it Elisha Cooper? oh my gosh, beautiful, stunning work about a woman who is a canoeist and decides to go down the Hudson River. It's a really long book for a picture book, but really, really nice. I might recommend that for like an older reader, maybe second, third, even fourth grade. They'll learn a lot about the Hudson River in New York.
Mm, lovely.
So Mari has these books in the room with us, and the first thing I said when I kind of looked over is that they're just all a range of titles here. They're just lovely books. So.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the best things about picture books is seeing the artwork. When you don't get enough of a fix of going out to see great art, you can really see it in some of our illustrators that do fantastic work with picture books.
Actually, just as a weird aside, I don't know how many people knew that Wisner has an exhibit in Grand Rapids now.
Oh, no.
He's probably my favorite, easily one of my favorite picture book artists.
Sure.
He's really famous for his wordless picture books, like Sector 7 or Tuesday is probably my absolute favorite book that Miss Cassie turned me on to when I first started here at Cattle. Mm-hmm. But there's an exhibit at the Grand Rapids Museum going through the rest of the year, maybe a little into 2020.
Excellent.
But that's just one of those cool things I just learned about.
Wonderful. Well, November is actually nonfiction November. It's also, as we just heard, Picture Book Month, but it's also Native American Heritage Month.
Yes.
And I had a really hard time narrowing down titles to talk about today. I settled on a few, and I'm leaving so many good ones out. That's the hard part about this. But I'd like to focus on An American Sunrise, poems by Joy Harjo. And Joy Harjo is our 23rd Poet Laureate of the United States. She's the first Native American Poet Laureate and the first Poet Laureate from Oklahoma. She's an enrolled member of the Muscogee Creek Nation. And American Sunrise is an absolutely beautiful work of poetry. And it's about how the Muscogee people were driven out of their land in Mississippi to Oklahoma. And in these poems, the thread of the story through the poems is that her family never went back. They didn't want to see that part of the river where they were from, where their land was. And she does go back. And that's sort of the kind of where the book sort of centers around that premise, going back, and the pain of her family not being able to go back and why they couldn't. It speaks so much of her love for her people, for her heritage, for the injustices that were done to them and other Native peoples in America, but also speaks of something very universal about the earth, about our American soil here, about our land, and really speaks to all of us. Absolutely universal work, just beautiful. Joy Harjo has written 9 books of poetry, 2 books for youth, and an acclaimed memoir called Crazy Brave, which is in my to read pile. Cannot wait to read that one. So just an absolutely a beautiful book and an excellent poet, and I'm just so happy that she's our Poet Laureate.
So one of my titles when I was kind of trying to pick out and fit into this sort of part of the theme, I recently read, there's a new book called Deadly Aim, the Civil War story of Michigan's Anishinaabe sharpshooters by Sally Walker. It's a bit of history I didn't know. So it was really interesting. This is really well documented. There's a lot of primary sources, letters in the illustrations, photographs. But it's a well-documented history of the contributions of Indigenous soldiers during the Civil War, and it's really focusing on this is the men from Company K of the 1st Michigan Sharpshooters. These are non-citizens at the time who volunteered after, I don't know how many broken treaties by this point. And the author kind of looks at it and, does sort of try to decide, not really make a decision, but kind of say it could have been because they genuinely believed in the North's views on slavery. And it could be because it was a way to maybe endear themselves with the North in the sense that we have this set of treaties, maybe they won't break this set of promises if we fight for them. There's a whole lot of reasons that could be behind what their decision, but no matter what they served as non-citizens faithfully, it has a really nice layout because it actually looks, it just kind of describes the tribe's history before any of this, and then it looks at they weren't accepted. They were not accepted into the army until 1863, at about the same time they finally started allowing African-American soldiers to serve. They were regularly turned away, even though they were the easily outdid their the white equivalents in their sharpshooting tests that you had to take to get into this particular group. And it's, you know, they were at the Battle of the Wilderness. They served, some of them ended up in Andersonville. Some of them, you know, it kind of follows them through their lives. And you do see, there's a very human part of this. You're looking at individuals as well as the group. And you can see, you know, the people who had to fight for any kind of pension, because again, non-citizens, why would we give them a pension? It's you know, it's that those, again, broken promises as you go through. Some people made out better than others, but it's just a really well done. It's actually a J nonfiction book, but it's so well laid out. I think it's like upper J teen,
right,
I'd say, but it's laid out so well. I think adults will, it's a one that adults can get a really good idea of the period from too.
Sure.
So it was just a really nice book.
Sounds like a book that there aren't that many other books on that particular topic and that particular angle.
It was new to me. So and it was well done.
Yeah,
very well done.
Very good. Wow. Sounds excellent. I have one for our youngest patrons, youngest family members in your family, or it actually is good for older children too, even though it's in a picture book format. The book is called My Heart Fills with Happiness by Monique Gray Smith, and the author, Monica Gray Smith, is of Cree, Lakota, and Scottish heritage. This is a really warm story. Again, has sort of a universal theme about children enjoying life, enjoying family life, enjoying nature, and just a beautiful, beautiful story. I believe it is actually a Canadian book. It's just lovely for sharing with really children of all ages. My other pick is, of course, a very well-known author, Louise Erdrich, an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Chippewa Pembina Band. Erdrich is well-known for short stories, fiction, poetry, memoir, and several works for children. She does have a new novel coming out. I'm really excited about it. March of 2020. It's called The Night Watchman. And so please look toward that. That's coming. It's really hard to pick a favorite title of Erdrich. She's one of my absolute favorite authors. But the one that stands out the most for me is The Last Report of the Miracles at Little No Horse. This is just truly amazing book. It's a story of an Ojibwe community, and you hear the story through the voices of the members. The voices are very different. It's one of those books that moves from character to character, and there's a central figure in the book of Father Damien, who I'll just say has his own secrets. And it's just one of those stories where it just pulls you in. It's written in this almost circular type style, where the characters circle in and out of the characters' lives. It's beautiful, it's captivating, it's really unforgettable. And I wanted to mention, too, that Louise Erdrich actually has a Minneapolis bookstore called Birch Bark Books. She has a fantastic website, great blog, and it's a good place to look for titles by Indigenous authors, including poetry. She has excellent reviews of books and a really good selection of items to look for, and then we can check our cattle catalog to see if we have those.
Yeah, that's bucket list of
yes.
bookstores I want to go to. Mm-hmm.
Minneapolis has so many wonderful bookstores.
I think we're segueing out of this, but I want to do a quick shout out to They're There. That's going to be our Capital Area One book in the spring. And I know if you're on the LCC campus, you're hearing about it right now, but, just, you know, in honor of the month, They're There by Tommy Orange is a great pick, and I know we've talked about it before, but, you know, just want to put it out there. And then I've got one that is sort of, it's sort of borderline, depending on your views, this may not hit you, this could be construed as inappropriate on one level, but there's a book that's recently out called Black Indian by Michigan-born author Sean Buchanan. And this is a beautiful, beautiful, raw book. It's kind of looking at the dysfunctional inheritance of a mixed-race family that's most recently settled in Mattawan in Van Buren County, Michigan. And she's not an enrolled member of a tribe. So that title could be off-putting for many people. But that's sort of the point of the book. It's that loss of heritage. Families that were part of tribes, were a mixed race, she's part black, part white, and with an indigenous background as well. But she's of that group of people, she's a descendant of that group of people that were borderline, not quite accepted anywhere, and kind of had to make decisions about how to succeed or, you know, just make ends meet. So there, it's a line of people who didn't trust the government and decided to go on their own instead of staying on a reservation. It's the people who could pass for white or black or native, depending on what it would get them. I mean, and if you're just trying to keep a family afloat, I don't blame them for that. But it means over time you're losing that heritage. There are some stories that might get passed down, but others that don't. There's a disconnect that causes its own problems. And in her most recent history, it's a legacy of abuse, and it's a cycle of abuse. So it's just this beautiful, raw story of finding self, finding, you know, just trying to find their story, trying to make sense of the story. She's a poet, is known as a poet first. And it's just a really beautiful, well-written story. So sort of segueing into things I've read that I think would make really interesting gifts or just are really well done, and everybody should just give it a try. So that's Black Indian by Shonda Buchanan.
You're adding to the read pile, Jessica.
I know. It is entirely my job.
Right.
I have been accused of being a pusher. That is true. I want y'all to have TBR piles that is to be read. Right. TBR piles that are falling over like I do. So what else?
Well, speaking of piles that are falling over, I'm going to recommend what I hope will be three books for you from the young adult genre, although really these books I think would appeal to adults as well. I've got two historical fictions. The first one is The Fountains of Silence. It's by Ruta Sepetys. She is known for a lot of historical books that usually have a teen characters in them. And this one is actually set in 1957 in in Spain during the era of Francisco Franco. And this is a time, if anyone knows anything about that period, he was very connected to the church and had not a lot of, in my view, a lot of great, you know, legacy to leave. One of the things that I've been really reading about and thinking about for a while is how there were a lot of babies that were stolen at that time and adopted out, and the church was a little bit complicit in that. So this story is about a teen who is in Spain temporarily with his family, and there's a friendship that develops with a woman who's a young girl, woman who's there. And it turns out that his own family adopts an infant. So I wonder where that's going to go, right? Just a really great read about trying to understand just the secrets that the history of Spain still deals with. And things about, I saw something on PBS not too long ago about mass graves. And it's just something I really hope you'll consider reading The Fountains of Silence by Ruta Sepetys. The other one is part historical fiction, but also part like ghost story. It's 13 Doors, Wolves Behind the Mall. And this is by Laura Ruby. This is really phenomenal. It's kind of a slow story. It's lingering a little bit in your mind. So I think some people might think it's a little too slow. I didn't think it was that slow, especially once you got started into it. But it's basically set in 1941 in an orphanage. There are two sisters, and actually there was a brother, too, in the orphanage. But the father, for whatever reason, has had to leave these children there. And the father eventually moves off to Colorado. The orphanage is set in Chicago, and it's Frankie and Tony who are left alone because Vito does get to go off to exciting Colorado when Dad remarries and finds someone else. And these two young teens get left, and they're really sad because they want a sense of, first of all, belonging. Why can't we be in the family? They have just a sense of, like, they have goals and dreams, and you think about where the history of women has been and just the kind of goals that the teens could have maybe in the 1940s and 50s. I didn't find the nuns too oppressive. Some of you might find the nuns really oppressive. But the real story for me was that there's this ghost who's kind of like wandering the orphanage. And the ghost is also a young teen who died during the Spanish flu in 1918, I think it was. And that the ghost really wants to affect the world, wants to impact the lives of the children who are in the orphanage. And it's just a really neat story of watching the ghost sort of try to figure out her days and run into other ghosts who are also roaming the 1941 area of Chicago. 13 Doors, Wolves Behind the Mall, and that's by Laura Ruby. And I guess I'll go.
You want to go ahead?
Yeah, I'll go quickly and just talk about Pet by Akwaeke
Emezi. Also on my list.
Wow. I have not read anything like this in a long time. I'm not really even sure. I'm not a big fantasy reader or science fiction reader, but I sort of feel like this is kind of a genre-bending sort of YA title. And Pet is about a young girl. Jam is her name. She is a transgender girl, and that's really kind of incidental to the story. Jam is all of a sudden confronted with this monster that comes out of a painting that her mom created, and the monster's name is Pet. Actually, Pet is not a monster as much as a creature. Pet has come to conquer a monster, and it's the story of just going through this fictional town that is probably set in the future of trying to figure out, like, what are the monsters in today's world anyway? And does anyone even acknowledge the monsters? And why aren't we doing anything about it? And just thinking about, you know, how can I affect the world when our society is in denial about the problems that we have or the monsters that are around. So I hope you'll consider reading that. It's a really quick read. And I also want to mention that Jam is a child who signs quite a bit with her communication, even though she's, as far as I can tell, she's not speech impaired. She just chooses to communicate with signing, although she does use her voice at sometimes. So
okay,
yeah, that's really compelling.
Yeah,
I just have a few titles that I'm not going to give a lot of plot details for, but I wanted to do a shout out to them for Native American Heritage Month. The first, because one of them is actually very new, it's Lakota America: A New History of Indigenous Power by Pekka Hämäläinen. And I would like to recommend that people take a look at that one. The other one is a finalist for the Andrew Carnegie Medal. It's The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee, Native America from 1890 to the Present by David Truer. You'll probably see this book on a lot of end-of-year lists. And I highly recommend you take a look at that one, too.
Okay. So It would seem that Cheryl has affected me because nonfiction November. This is my last nonfiction title, but it is maybe one of my favorite books of the year, and that is In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. I mentioned her. I had read her book of kind of horror short stories last month. And I had been waiting for this to come. This is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful book. It's intense. It's a memoir of a failed relationship and a failed and abusive relationship. So if you're kind of in that group of people who wonder why she stayed, this is a really interesting examination by someone who stayed too long. And it's, she takes it apart and turns it around and looks at it from every angle. And it's just, it's a complex and really interestingly organized book because she goes through, the dream house is the relationship. And it, each chapter, it's actually a very quick read, though it's an intense read. And, you know, one of the sections is Dream House as spy thriller. Another section is Dream House as choose your own adventure. Dream House as surprise ending or Dream House as the apocalypse. It sort of takes those different genres or tropes or ideas and kind of examines the relationship from different points of view. And it's just really wonderfully done. It considers her background, her self-esteem issues, stereotypes, queer history as it relates to domestic abuse. She examines how she was trapped in a sense trapped herself in a relationship that could have cost her life. It's harrowing and it's engrossing, and there's a twist at the end that I did not see coming. I knew a little bit about her. I knew that she was in a successful and loving relationship now, but I did not see what happened. That in itself was really cool and hopeful. And so it's just one of those books I think anybody, regardless of sexual orientation or whatever, it's just a really interesting look at that kind of relationship.
Jessica, can you share the foreword on that book?
The foreword.
You had mentioned to me the notes in the beginning.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
brief, but it's
the very, very brief. And she kind of taught, if you look for interviews about this book, it's called In the Dream House, a memoir. And then the first thing within the book is, if you need this book, it is for you.
Yeah.
And then there are kind of a few other really nice comments or kind of quotes in the beginning, but it's that first one, and that's really resonated. I've kind of watched it kind of unfold on Twitter as people have been reading it, and that has resonated so much with people. And it is, I think, queer relationships have, especially as the people were fighting for recognition, marriage recognition, and that sort of thing, that there was kind of a monolith of these are committed relationships that nothing's ever going to go wrong in them. And, you know, everybody's human. You're going to have abusive relationships no matter the makeup of the couple. Yeah, it just happens. But there's been a lot of silence about it. And there's a lot of silence about abuse in general. But this is just a bit of cultural history that needs to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So. Want to go another?
If we have a few more moments, I would like to
I'm going to do two more before the end. Go.
Okay. I'd like to mention a few really beautiful picture books that I've enjoyed recently, and I think they're even gift-worthy for children of all ages. The first one is called This Book of Mine by Sarah Stewart and pictures by her husband David Small. This is a really brief book, but it's beautiful, and it's about the love of books and words and reading. Just a gorgeous book to share with really a child of any age. And I think there are a lot of adults who would love this book as well. Book-loving adults.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just beautiful. The other one is just a beautiful book, really great for this week because it was World Kindness Day and people were wearing their cardigans for Mr. Rogers. This is You Are My Friend, the story of Mr. Rogers and his neighborhood, with words by Amy Reed and pictures by Matt Phelan. And this is a picture book biography of Mr. Rogers, and it starts with Fred Rogers as a child and discusses some of the hardships that really kind of made for a lot of what made Fred who he was, and then moves on forward through the creation of the TV show. It's lovely watercolor illustrations, just again a beautiful book to share with a child, really good springboard for maybe watching the show, talking about the show, talking about some of the themes in the show. Just a gorgeous book and a beautiful gift, again, for people of all ages. Mr. Rogers has appeal for adults too. So many picture books are so great for all ages. I have two more. Briefly, I have an older title here. It's called You Belong Here, written by M.H. Clarke and illustrated by Isabel Arsenault. This is one of the most beautifully illustrated picture books that I've ever seen. And the message is very intimate. It's somebody talking to a child, perhaps a parent or a grandparent, just telling the child that they belong. They belong in the family. They belong on the earth. It has a very strong nature theme, and it gives you that warm feeling, gives the child the warm feeling. This would even be a good book for a brand new baby. It'd be one that the baby would rip a little bit in the beginning because it's real paper pages, not a board book, but it's just an absolutely stunning book. Even be a good book for an older child, just to sort of talk about those feelings of love and belonging and that everybody belongs. And then, of course, I have to have a funny book. Those were kind of more serious. Mr. Noggin Body Gets a Hammer by David Shannon. And this is Mr. Noggin Body is an egg, and he gets a hammer, and he doesn't know what a hammer is. And so he starts hammering absolutely everything that he sees. And he's an egg. He's very fragile. This is kind of ridiculously silly, and my daughter read it once and said, I need that book, Mom. I need that book in my collection. She wants it forever because it's just so hilarious. He's trying to hammer down flowers. He thinks that those are nails. It's silly, it's funny, and it just speaks to a child's, really kind of speaks to a child's heart and that's funny, silly, yeah, that funny, silly part of children. So it's just fantastic and fun.
All right, I will do one really quick and one I will gush just a little bit about because I have to. First one is a romance. It's Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert. This is first book I've read by Hibbert. I loved it. It's fabulously diverse. It's an interracial romance, female lead with health issues, and a male lead with mental health issues. And actually, both of them have some mental, it's that sort of leaving a little bit of a PTSD from previous relationships. Chloe is trying to push out of her comfort zone. She's got this list of adventurous goals, but without letting people in to hurt her again. And Red's kind of run from the world after an abusive relationship, and he's kind of he's a amazing artist, but he's been working as basically maintenance staff at her apartment complex. Their trust issues are all over the place, but there's a lot of humor and a lot of heart. So just, it's her first major release with one of the major companies. She's done quite a bit of self-publishing and that sort of thing. And I've heard about her for years. This is like one of the first books I've been able to get easily for the library system. And it's a great book. The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern. You may know Erin Morgenstern. Her first book was absolutely fabulous. It's The Night Circus. This is her new book. It just came out. This is one of Cheryl. This is one of my weird books. It is fantasy, kind of. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this. Chapter one introduces the pirate and the maiden. Chapter two introduces the acolyte. Three introduces the son of the fortune teller, who doesn't open the magical door. He kind of walks by in the alley. He's right off of his mother's building, and it's a door that wasn't there the day before. And he knows, he wants it to be one of those magical doors, but he doesn't want to test it because he doesn't want to be disappointed. So he never opens the door.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Chapter 4 opens with a grad student finding an old unidentified book on the shelves of his academic library, and he reads about the pirate, and he reads about the acolyte, and he reads about himself when he was a little kid and he didn't open the door.
Oh, wow.
And he's looking around like he's been caught on candid camera. He has no idea what this is going on, but he has to understand because it is exactly his experience. It is exactly his mother's story. He knows this is about him. And this book is old, and it's from a collect. I mean, he's tracking down the provenance of this book and the collection that it came from, and he just needs that. So it's a bit of an academic mystery. It is a fantasy. There are doors that lead to different places. So Zachary Ezra Rollins goes on an adventure. It's beautiful. It's really complex. There's a lot of stories within stories. Star-crossed love. It's just, there's so much going on in this book, and I really, really think anybody should read it. If you are a fan of Neil Gaiman, you definitely should be reading it. If you are a fan of Alex Harrow's 10,000 Doors of January, pick that up quick. It's just, if you like your portal fantasies, this is just one of those, it's just beautifully done. And I loved The Night Circus, so I had really, this is a big bar. This is so much deeper, and there's much more depth, and it's so interesting, and the layers, the complexity of the layers of the story, because you've got so many stories going on, and you find out kind of what happens to all of these people as time goes on, but it's a big ongoing story that he walks kind of into the middle of, and I think anybody would enjoy this book.
Wow.
So that's my big one that I've been sitting on for a while, and I just, everybody, it's a great gift book, it's a beautiful book.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've seen some of the other covers for it. They're all beautiful books. So I mentioned I'd gush. I've done my gushing. Everybody go read The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern.
Okay.
Anything else today?
I'm just going to do a quick shout out for a kids' nonfiction book. It's called 1919, The Year That Changed America. It's by Martin Sandler. This is like a book that I would recommend even for a coffee table because it has so many wonderful photographs, and it's written, I would say, like at the fourth to sixth grade level.
Okay.
But it really just kind of documents so many changes that happened in 1919. It covers women's suffrage, the labor strike, if anyone remembers the molasses flood in Boston. It was just very well researched, and like I said, really wonderful selection of photographs. I would recommend that for families to like just take it a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
At night as a family, talking about history and how things that happen 100 years ago will influence what's happening 100 years from now. So I thought that was neat.
Sounds great.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I think we're finishing up, but I do want to do a shout out that voting for the 2021, that seems so far away, the 2021 Capital Area One book is going on now. This is something we CATL does in collaboration with Delta Township District Library and Lansing Community College. The nominees this year are Inheritance by Danny Shapiro, A Good Family by David Marinus, The Library Book by Susan Orlean, and From Here to Eternity by Caitlin Doty. Get out there and vote for which one you want us to focus on.